You're listening to Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada.
The real key here is that the farmers themselves are empowered by their participation in the fair trade system.
This three-part documentary series explores growing international movements to create new trading systems that respect farmers and workers, and to establish ethical standards in manufacturing and resource extraction.
Fair trade has made possible for indigenous people to connect to other communities beyond these boundaries.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
And I'm Asad Ismi.
We have to start to pay attention in what we buy, and we have to demand to know in which conditions the goods that we consume in are being made.
This is Global Pillage, the first part of our series. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring the roots of the current world trading system to illustrate the urgent need for change and the importance of fair trade and ethical trade. Stay tuned.
The present global so-called free trade system is the result of 5 centuries of genocide and plunder inflicted by Western colonial powers upon the Third World. In this sense, it is not a trading system at all, but outright robbery. Western imperialist states such as Britain, France, Spain, Portugal, the United States, Netherlands, Germany, and Belgium colonized 80% of the world's surface from the 1400s onwards. They forced developing countries into the subordinate position of raw material suppliers to the West and open markets for its manufactured goods. This crippled industrial development in the Third World and ensured its poverty while bringing prosperity to the West. The slave trade from Africa, the opium wars in China, and the genocide of 70 million natives in the American continent were part of this destructive process.
The end of formal colonization changed little, as developing countries were faced with the same free trade system, which continued to enrich former colonial powers. After 1945, the United States took over leadership of this system and enforced it by invading southern countries and overthrowing their progressive leaders through military coups. This is neocolonialism. Developing countries continued to get very low prices for their raw materials on world markets, and their industrialization was blocked by high tariffs in the West, as well as by U.S. military and political intervention. The prices of these raw materials declined, while those of manufactured goods kept increasing, impoverishing many southern countries. The gap between rich and poor countries has now become so large that 20% of the world's population uses 80% of its resources.
In Africa, European imperialism used colonialism, genocide, and slavery to establish the domination of the Western free trade model. The Portuguese and British empires dominated the slave trade. According to Dr. Guy Martin, who teaches political science at Winston-Salem State University in the U.S., the number of deaths directly resulting from slavery may be estimated at about 500 million Africans between 1450 and 1900. For each African slave exported, 5 died in the process of capture, travel, and transportation due to extreme cruelty and hardship. The death rate for slaves after they reached their destination was 40%. This was the greatest genocide in world history. This incredible European savagery explains the immense depopulation of the African continent. Africa's population increased from 100 million to only 120 million people between 1650 and 1900. Europe's population quadrupled and that of Asia more than tripled in the same period. The African slaves were shipped to South, Central, and North America to work mainly on plantations and in mines because European colonialists had killed off the native populations in these areas. Thabo Madilaba is National Director of the Environmental Justice Networking Forum, a network of more than 400 community organizations based in South Africa.
The slavery system was the base for the current free trade system. That is where it originated. The whole setting up of the free trade system started a long time ago when the European imperialists so Africa as the, you know, as the source of raw materials. And the first raw material that they saw was the human raw material, which was in the form of slaves. They decided, they came into Africa, then they decided, like, look, we've got this control over these people. Now they took them into slavery so that they can use that that human resource for their own production to generate wealth.
Slavery created incredible wealth for Europe and the United States. Entire cities were built from the profits of the slave trade. These included the British cities of Liverpool, Glasgow, and Bristol.
The generation of wealth in Europe is not something that is just happening now simply because they are advanced industrially. It started a long time ago through the whole slavery system, when the African continent was deprived of its, you know, human resource capital, because the slavery system was taking away the young, economically active people of Africa. So therefore, Africa was deprived of people who could develop it, grow it economically, so that it could generate wealth that would satisfy the needs of its own people. The draining of the human capital from Africa assisted Europe to create their wealth, because this was free labor, as we know, in every sector where there is production for profit. Labor is one of the most expensive aspect of the production. So if you have got the labor costs cut completely, where you get your labor for free, then you are able to get richer very, very quickly. That is what we see as the basis of the current capitalist system right now.
The slave trade devastated African economies, causing enormous poverty that kept increasing. Today, more than half of Africa's population of 682 million lives below the poverty line.
The origin of the current poverty in Africa is the loss of the human capital through slavery.
The phenomenal wealth generated by slavery was not enough for European empires, which proceeded to colonize Africa in order to loot its substantial natural resources. In the Congo alone, 10 million people were killed under Belgian colonial rule so as to extract the maximum amount of ivory and rubber. The Congo's population was cut in half. European colonialism plundered Africa's rich mineral resources, paying nothing for them, as it had paid nothing for African labor. Mine workers were paid very little. This situation persists today, with mineral prices and workers' wages remaining very low under the free trade system, while manufactured goods made in the West with the minerals are sold back to Africa at high prices. After 1945, the U.S. took over the colonial role of European powers in Africa and enforced the free trade system by demolishing African economies through World Bank and IMF structural adjustment programs and fueling 11 wars on the continent with arms transfers and military training. This continuing genocidal imperial strategy has killed more than 26 million Africans and allowed the West to attain Africa's abundant natural riches cheaply.
Things haven't improved. I mean, slavery is still there, but in very much newer and more modern forms, where people are sort of formally trapped into slavery that they technically accept, you know. People are sort of brainwashed into understanding and accepting that, look, this is a global system, and we just have to live with it, we just have to adapt to it. So that is the more modern, formalized kind of slavery, but it still continues. So basically, the transition from the free labor, you go into cheap labor, where you pay very, very little, and then they increase on the extraction and don't pay anything for the raw materials. The main effect on the continent, I would say, it's increasing the level of poverty, and it's just worsening it by day. Yeah, as long as the current trade system continues, there is no way Africa would get out of the current poverty where it is right now. And you will always be able to trace its roots in the slavery system.
You are listening to Global Pillage, the first part of Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada. Stay tuned for the second half of this program.
In Asia, European empires used colonialism, genocide, and drug trafficking to enforce free trade. Here, European invaders were faced with China and India, the two most industrially advanced and richest countries in the world before 1800. They formed the center of the world economy. Together, China and India made up 57% of world manufacturing output, and Asia's total share was about 70%. In 1750, 80% of the world's wealth was produced in Asia. China was richer than any part of Europe.
The European colonial takeover of India and China destroyed the industries of both countries. In India, the hands of textile workers were cut off by the British, who forced the country to import clothes from England and to export raw cotton. This imperialist free trade led to disastrous famines, which, along with extreme taxation, caused the deaths of millions of Indians. Under British rule, 10 million people died in the province of Bengal alone, one-third of the population. Two centuries of British rule made India a vast abyss of all-pervading poverty.
In another example of colonial free trade, the British launched the two Opium Wars against China in 1839 and 1856 in order to force the Chinese emperor to buy opium grown in India. Martin Kaur is with the Third World Network, a Malaysian-based international coalition of organizations involved in development and North-South issues.
The English wanted to export opium grown in India, which was also under British control, to China so that they could buy the spices from China and they don't have to pay with gold, they would pay with opium. So after many years of this, the Chinese found that it had drastic health and economic consequences for China, and they told the British, we are banning the import of opium. And the British said, no, you can't, because we believe in free trade. The Chinese said, we believe in free trade, but on health grounds, we cannot accept your opium anymore. And when they actually did ban the opium and in fact burned some of the opium in the pots, the British went to war and started bombing some of the ports from their battleships. And when the Chinese lost that war, then they had to sign a treaty, which the Chinese up till today call the Unequal Treaties, in which the Chinese had to agree to continue to import opium, as well as to allow British companies and banks to set up to invest in several of the Chinese areas, and also had to agree to give the island of Hong Kong to the British for 100 years.
After submitting to unequal treaties, China saw its craft iron and steel industries partly destroyed. Britain and France enjoyed quasi-colonial status within China's five major cities. With opium's legalization, China got 13.5 million opium addicts, an unprecedented number.
So this story actually tells us that from many, many years ago, the developed countries wanted to impose actually freedom of trade, not the freedom of the colonies to trade, but the freedom of the mother country, in this case it was Great Britain, not to trade but to export whatever they wanted to export to the poorer countries. Now, this phenomenon seems to have continued up till today, because what is driving many of these countries is the desire to act on behalf of their companies to both trade and invest in the developing countries. And when the developing countries say, look, we are now independent and we want to have our own policies to develop our own national economies, this does not go well with the transnational companies.
The United States took over the colonial role from European empires in Asia after 1945. In 1965, the U.S. launched a genocidal war on Vietnam to preserve the neocolonial American domination of Asia and the free trade system. 3 million Vietnamese were killed in the war. The U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq today continues the destructive Western policy of economic domination through military force in Asia.
Many of the wars that are fought by the United States, including the war in Iraq, have their roots in the desire to control the resources in the developing countries. It is no coincidence that Iraq is very rich in oil resources. Those territories that have important resources do not want to cooperate or are seen as not wanting to cooperate. Then perhaps the U.S. and other developed countries may consider using the military option. Again, this has an analogy in the Opium Wars. You know, the U.K., I'm sure, need not have opened fire on China if they had readily agreed to continue buying opium. But the moment a country stands up and says, well, I want to make my own decision because I have the interests of my own people at heart. And if that interest clashes with the interests of the big companies in the big countries, you may see threats being put on the developing world. And this is what we have seen in the last many years too.
In the Americas, the free trade system was set up by wiping out almost the entire population. The European empires killed 70 million people, that is 90% of the native population, in only 50 years between 1500 and 1550. This is the second biggest genocide in world history after the African one. The British, French, U.S., and Canadian colonization of North America killed more than 15.6 million people out of a population of 16 million. The Spanish conquest of Mexico killed 23.5 million indigenous people from a population of 25 million.
This astounding European barbarism was motivated by greed, according to Bartolomé de las Casas, a priest who accompanied Christopher Columbus. He explained, Christians have killed and destroyed so many worthy souls for the sole purpose of acquiring gold, of enriching themselves very fast, and of enhancing their social status. Gold from the Americas formed the foundation of the Spanish Empire. Also, for centuries, European nations developed a culture based on the genocide and dispossession of non-Europeans. Alexis de Tocqueville, the French philosopher, remarked in 1840, if we reason from what passes in the world, we could almost say that the European is to other races of mankind what man is to the lower animals. He makes them subservient to his use, and when he cannot subdue them, he destroys them.
The European colonizers did not consider American native people to be dependable workers for mines and plantations, so they were to be wiped out as a people and replaced by African slaves and European settlers. The natives not killed were enslaved, and along with African slaves were to be worked to death and rapidly replaced. The European ships that brought slaves to the Americas took gold, silver, sugar, coffee, rum, cotton, and tobacco from there to Europe. This trade shattered the economies of both the Americas and Africa, but enriched Europe enormously, since its nations paid neither for the labor nor the resources. So for the European empires, this literally was free trade. Fernando Hernandez is a Maya Tzotzil from the state of Chiapas in Mexico. He's founder of the Food for Chiapas campaign and works with native people to heal the effects of the trauma caused by colonization.
Between 70 and 100 million indigenous people were killed, you know, in the first 100 years of contact. And then all the slavery, they happened afterwards. You know, till probably the early 1950s, at least here in Mexico, with the encomiendas. Huge land masses, property of the church, and rich landowners, where indigenous people were working as slaves. and with black people who were brought, you know, as slaves here. Maya people were forced to go and work in the sugar, cotton, and coffee plantations. But in the eyes of the church, you know, any other human being, you know, that it was in other lands, if they were not Christian, they were not humans, you know, then what happened in this continent, you know, at the beginning of colonization, is that everything was considered, according to the church, you know, property of the Spanish crown and of Christian men. Therefore, we became possession. We became objects. The reason that, you know, this globalization of the economy started, you know, it was with the aim of control and the acquisition of power. And everything has to do with that, you know. What we see today is the continuation of the policies that were implemented more than 500 years ago that now have become more sophisticated.
The United States replaced the European nations as the colonial power in the Americas, taking over half of Mexico in 1846. The U.S. maintained the free trade system by invading and occupying Latin American countries and by using local militaries to overthrow progressive regimes and massacre thousands of people. With this reign of terror, the U.S. has killed more than 500,000 Latin Americans since 1945.
The U.S., no, has for a long time, no, the eyes on natural resources in Mexico. The army and the police have been, you know, one of the stepping stones to maintain the economical power of, you know, the U.S. The Mexican army has been trained by American military advisors, many who have gone through the School of the Americas, many who have been trained by the CIA on psychological warfare. No, the army has been used many times, you know, to oppress and repress people, to kill people, to remove, force removal of, you know, indigenous people from their communities, because it happens that, you know, in that land there is oil, or there is uranium, or there is other, you know, natural resources that can be exploited by corporations or by other governments.
The free trade treaties the U.S. has imposed on Latin America, such as the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, deepen the already extreme economic exploitation brought by European colonialism.
This political, economical system that continues to exploit and rob, you know, the things that belongs to every single human being in this planet. Then it's no different from what, you know, the Spaniards did when they came and killed hundreds and hundreds of people, and, you know, just to see, you know, and to demand, well, where is the gold? I think that in the sense of exploitation of natural resources and traditional lands by, you know, corporations and by governments in power through NAFTA, GATT, and all those different, you know, systems, has nothing really different from how colonization was implemented, imposed among indigenous people. NAFTA really reinforced the policies of acquisition by exploiting indigenous people, traditional lands, natural resources, to exploit to the max, you know, and leave nothing to the people who have taken care of the land for so long.
For more than five centuries, the people and economies of Asia, Africa, and Latin America have been devastated and impoverished by the free trade system, and this global pillage continues today. It is this extreme exploitation of the Third World by the West that fair trade and ethical trade try to redress. Fair and ethical trade groups in Canada are part of a growing international movement that brings together progressive northern buyers and farmers and workers in the south. Fair trade links purchasers in northern countries with cooperatives in the developing world that grow coffee, cocoa, bananas, sugar, tea, fruit, spices, nuts, and other commodities, as well as make clothes, shoes, handicrafts, and other goods. Fair trade buyers give southern farmers higher prices and collaborate with them to ensure decent working conditions on the farms and environmental sustainability.
Whereas fair trade sets up an alternative trading system, ethical trading groups in Canada and other northern countries advocate better working conditions for southern workers within the present trading structure, especially in the clothing and mining sectors. They call for higher wages, higher prices for minerals, and the right to unionization. Fair and ethical trade cannot by themselves end the crisis of global poverty created by centuries of colonialism and neocolonialism, but they empower and unite people from the North and South in a common struggle for a just world.
For Fernando Hernandez, fair trade is a step towards taking back the economic system.
I think that it has created in many communities, you know, a sense of, you know, we can do it. There is another way of, you know, creating an economy. For us, it has opened a new door, a new window to establish a different relationship with communities all over the world. As Mayan people, you know, fair trade is a path where we can then implement or understand the economical world according to our vision.
You've been listening to Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada. This half-hour program was the first in a three-part series. Our next program profiles the fair trade market in coffee and cocoa.
You can hear all three parts online. Go to www.ckln.fm and look for the link. Or email news@ckln.fm for more information. I'm Asad Ismin, writer, researcher, and executive producer.
I'm Kristen Schwartz, producer. Thanks especially to Susie Alvarez for the concept of this series, to Mark Balkowski for production assistance, and to CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. Our theme music for this series is El Mercado Equitativo by Reina Isabel Torres. It is performed by the group Recopiladores de la Pante, who are part of a cooperative of small coffee producers in Nicaragua.
Music during the break is by Issa Bogayogo from Mali. The track is called Saye Mogobana.
This series was funded by the Canadian Union of Public Employees,
Canadian Auto Workers,
Canadian Labour Congress,
Canadian Union of Postal Workers,
Canadian Federation of Students,
Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation,
Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association,
Ontario Public Interest Research Group, University of Toronto,
Mining Watch Canada,
and Transfer Canada.
Thanks for listening.